The winter of 2016 to 2017 was extreme. Not only did it put an end to extended drought in most of California, it delivered far more precipitation than average and even set some rainfall records. The state experienced a different kind of extreme in 1862 when the state was pounded by storm after storm over a short period of time, which caused what some called mega floods, the likes of which we haven't seen since. A new paper out in the research journal Nature Climate Change explores how common events like this will become in California's future. FM89's Carrie Klein spoke to UCLA climate scientist Daniel Swain, the study's lead author, about his work.
I am really interested in the extremes of weather and climate. It's both a personal fascination and a really key professional research interest as well. So when California in the last few years has gone from experiencing one of its most severe droughts on record, then very quickly transitioned into one of its wettest years on records in Northern California that essentially came close to ending the drought in a lot of spots, and also experienced its worst wildfire season on record by a pretty wide margin, all within the span of just a few years. These sorts of events are things that are motivating for those of us who study climate in this part of the world. And so with the recent occurrence of all these sorts of extremes that have had a lot of really adverse impacts in California, it's something that we really wanted to consider more formally.
And so in this study, you were really trying to figure out what's the likelihood of really extreme wet events in California, but not just that, but also what's the likelihood of really short time periods where we'll run from extremely dry events to extremely wet events.
Yeah, so one of the goals of this work was to look at the full spectrum of precipitation. One challenge is that a lot of studies so far regarding how California's precipitation may change in the future have focused on how average annual precipitation, might trend as the climate warms. And the problem with that, I think, is a lot of folks in California who pay attention to the weather are intimately familiar, the average doesn't really describe precipitation in any given year particularly well. We often swing from dry to wet. That is sort of our characteristic climate. And so we wanted to look at both wet and dry events and in the big transitions between the two all at once. And in doing so, what we found was a big future increase in the likelihood of, we've already been talking about, very wet events on multiple timescales, but also in really dry years. So we see an increase both in the really wet rainy seasons, but also in rainy seasons that are quite dry, even though the average isn't changing that much. They're, in a certain sense, they're canceling each other out. But from the perspective of anybody on the ground who really cares about the weather or the extremes of weather, having a lot more wet years and a lot more dry years, they don't really cancel each other out in terms of the impacts that you experience agriculturally or economically or environmentally. And so what we find is that there's this big increase in what we call precipitation whiplash. So when we transition quickly from very dry to very wet conditions, and that, for a variety of reasons, can be problematic, more problematic than, say, a gradual transition. And it's because we find an increase both in the very wet and in the very dry that this whiplash is increasing. It really is coming from both sides of the precipitation spectrum. The increase in really wet events does seem to outpace the increase in really dry events. And that's partly because some of these extremely wet events are becoming much wetter. And those are really sort of driving the balance there. But we really do see an increase in both wet and dry.
And so how did this involves some pretty elaborate climate modeling and weather modeling. How did you actually get to, how were you sort of parsing what's happened in weather and climate in the past to sort of determine, what's going to be happening in the coming years and what sort of time frame were you actually looking at?
So in climate science, we often end up needing to use fairly sophisticated mathematical models to simulate what the climate does in response to different sorts of things we can throw at it, different sorts of changes we can make to the atmosphere or to the land surface, to the ocean, because, of course, we can't really build a physical, tangible model in a lab and perform these experiments. The real world, the coupling between the atmosphere and the ocean and the land surface is too complicated and too large in scale. So what we do is use these mathematical models run on supercomputers that are effectively based on equations from physics and chemistry. So some fundamental science that goes into these, and we run them on supercomputers, and we make different assumptions about the way the Earth is at different points in time. And the primary difference between the simulations we use to simulate past climate and future climate is simply the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So what that means is that as we increase greenhouse gas concentrations in these simulations in a way that's similar to what we have actually done in the real-world atmosphere by burning fossil fuels, for example, what we see is a marked divergence between these two simulations in what the climate is actually doing, both globally and regionally here in California. And in those simulations where we include this increase in greenhouse gas concentrations and extend it, if we extrapolate forward a bit into further into the 21st century and assume a certain degree of increased concentration beyond what we've already done, that's when these big changes in California's precipitation extremes start to emerge. So what we found is that up to the present time, up into about the 2015 through 2020 period in these simulations, that's where a lot of these changes in California's climate in terms of precipitation extremes start to become detectable. We're essentially in the decade when some of these increases in extremes are probably going to become apparent. And interestingly, other scientists have done some work recently suggesting that a lot of these changes, in fact, are starting to become detectable. If we completely ignore the climate models for a moment and just look at observations from rain gauges and from satellites, some of these increases in extremes in California are already starting to happen. So it's an interesting way of validating the fact that the models seem to be latching on to something that is really happening in the real world.
So climate change is really no longer a hypothetical.
Well, climate change itself hasn't been a hypothetical for a long time, but I think some of the more complicated regional manifestations of it in terms of precipitation extremes, for example, is starting to move from being something that was a prediction about the future to being something that's now closer to a reality of the world we're living in now. And obviously, we're still not at the point where this increase is enormous in all places at all times. But, you know, our projections, if we continue on the path we're currently on with respect to carbon emissions into the atmosphere, we will reach a point in just a few decades in California where we live in a climate that is really noticeably different than the one that a lot of our water infrastructure was built for example, in the 20th century.
And so you said that these models, these simulations that you ran, they conclude that it, you know, into the coming decades and the next century, we'll be seeing a higher likelihood of really extreme wet events, but also these so-called whiplash events, a really great term for, you know, extreme drought to extreme wet years. Do you have a prediction for, you know, maybe how many of these events or what kind of frequency we'll be seeing them on?
I think one of the most interesting things to think about is to go back to the 1862 example. And, you know, one of the reasons we looked at that event in this paper was that nobody else really had. There's very little scientific research on that 1862 event. And the main reason for that is there's not a lot of information on it. There are newspaper records back from 1862. But that's about all there is to go on. There's also some sediment records, meaning that, you know, scientists have looked at the flood deposits and the mud and dirt and debris at the bottom of some of the coastal river channels and inferred that a very big flood must have occurred then. But in, meteorologically speaking, there's not a whole lot we know about it. So what we were able to do in this study was to go back, and because we ran the climate model many, many times, we were able to get a better idea of what this sort of really extreme event actually looks like. And it's thought that it's an event that had less than a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. It's sufficiently big that it's extremely rare, probably something that only happens every 200 years or so, which seems plausible because it's been over 150 years and it hasn't happened again since. But if we extend that simulation through the end of the 21st century, we see that most of these simulations suggest that an 1862 level flood might happen multiple times across large portions of the state of California, when previously, over any given 80 or so year period, it probably wouldn't have happened even once. It was so rare. So we're going from something that happened maybe once every 200 years to something that's happening more like once a generation. And that's an enormous change when it comes to an event of this incredibly severe magnitude as that 1862 flood.
And then what about whiplash events, like what we experienced, around the year 2016?
So when those sorts of events are events that we in both in simulations and in the real world, we see roughly 4 or 5 times every century. So it's a little bit less than a one in a generation sort of a whiplash event historically. And what we find is that those are probably going to happen somewhere around twice as frequently. So instead of maybe a handful of times every 100 years, maybe closer to 8 or 10 times every 100 years. So that's roughly a doubling in the likelihood there.
And so, as you said, a higher likelihood and probability of these kinds of events, you know, has implications for a lot more than just, you know, the weather that we're looking outside our windows. I mean, you know, we have to think about infrastructure. We have to think about the environment and where we build. You know, you kind of argue in this paper that this increase in really wet years could be damaging and dangerous to California.
Yeah. In addition to the fact that this 1862 event was intriguing because no one had really done work on it scientifically, the other reason I think it's really interesting is that a lot of infrastructure, a lot of the flood protection in California and elsewhere is supposed to withstand what's known as the 200-year flood, which is a flood that has about only a half a percent chance of happening in any given year, and so for the most part is statistically unlikely to happen in any given person's lifetime. That's historically been seen as a sufficiently high margin of safety for things like dams and levees that protect residential areas. This is especially important, for example, in Sacramento, which is thought to be one of North America's most flood vulnerable cities, right up there with New Orleans and Houston. And both of those two cities have had catastrophic floods now within the past decade. And so if that 200-year flood is now occurring a couple times per century. In other words, if the 200-year flood becomes the 50-year flood, then we don't have nearly as much of a safety margin or nearly as robust a flood protection as we thought we did. And that's something that I think we really need to be thinking about as the climate warms. You know, we've been thinking a lot about drought in California because we've been experiencing recently more drought than the opposite side of things. But really, I think when we think about sort of climate proofing in the future of California, we really also need to be thinking about the really increasing risk of flood as well.
Really interesting,
and I think
questions.
This work,
well, Daniel Swain, thanks so much for joining us.
Some of the
today.
Assumptions we've made
so
about how good our current preparations are, well, they may not be good enough for the future climate.
Daniel Swain is a climate scientist in UCLA's Institute of the Environment and Sustainability. His study on precipitation and floods appears in the most recent issue of the research journal Nature Climate Change.